WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello and welcome to WrestleSpective. I'm Jason Mann. Before we begin, I want to tell you about our sponsor, RotoReels.com, which is a great place to find DVDs and downloads of all the best in professional wrestling. So check them out at RotoReels.com. And my guest today, returning to the show, is Adam Jones of Kayfabe Comedy. Adam, welcome back.
What? Hello? Oh, hi, Jason. I didn't see you there.
You didn't see me there. That's very strange.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, you know, in July 1996, there was a pay-per-view main event that changed the face of professional wrestling. But I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about, instead, the main event of International Incident 1996.
That's a far inferior choice to make.
Well, we have our reasons.
Yes. The reasons, if I remember correctly, I think it was, a few months ago during Raw's build to their 1,000th show when, Twitter exploded when Sid came out to destroy Heath Slater?
Yes.
And I think you said, I don't understand Sid.
Yeah, I believe I said, I don't really get Sid.
Right.
Putting get in quotes. I mean, I kind of do, but I don't.
Yeah, so I immediately jump upon the worst Sid match. Not the worst Sid match, but a Sid match in your archives, because I need to talk about the master and ruler of the world.
All right, well, I'm glad to give you that opportunity. So... the match, for those who don't know, it is Shawn Michaels, who is at the time WWF champion, Sid and Ahmed Johnson, at the time Intercontinental champion, against Camp Cornette, made up of Vader, the British Bulldog, and Owen Hart. Which, you know, Camp Cornette's not really talked about very much in the annals of, you know, of stables, even in, you know, in the mid-90s. And I don't know if they really had a standout, you know, story or angle that really makes them that memorable. But, you know, considering the talent that was involved, that's a pretty good collection right there.
Yeah, I mean, they're just one of those things where they're less than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
I mean, were they even the best camp of the 90s? Camp David, Camp Candy was pretty good. That was John Candy's cartoon he had where he was a camp counselor.
That's right.
And but yeah, I mean, as someone who unabashedly loves Cornette and Owen Hart, for whatever reason, Camp Cornette does not grab me.
Yeah, I don't know. Cornette was just like, I love Cornette the performer in the 80s and even into the early 90s. But at this point, there was something about him that just, I don't know if just WWF wasn't the best environment for him or what it was, but he just kind of seemed lessened than he had been, you know, in years before.
I think that's what it is. It's, you have to really kind of be into what you're doing. And even, you know, whether it's silly or it's great, and you can just sort of tell when someone doesn't believe in it. And you look at, like, you know, when the Federation brought in Dusty Rhodes and pretty much just gave him a gimmick so they could say, look how dumb Jim Crockett is. And he took it and he ran with it because he had fun with it.
Right.
Or even now, you look at like Daniel Bryan and Kane, and it's like they're in this ridiculous storyline, but both of them believe it and know exactly what it is, and they have fun with it, and that translates to the viewer. You know, so that's what it is. It's like you can tell Cornette was kind of getting up to here with, you know, Vince McMahon and just sort of the Federation, and I think he'll be the first one to tell you how much he hates living in Connecticut. So I just kind of feel that translated into his work as a performer. You know, he's still, you know, 85% of a Jim Cornette is still one of the better managers in all wrestling, but that's just sort of, you can tell when someone doesn't really care.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think that's a good, probably pretty good explanation for it. Because, yeah, at times he would definitely hit those marks and be really strong, but other times it was just kind of like, yeah, just it wasn't the same for whatever reason. So, so this begins at, genesis of this is at King of the Ring 96. Shawn Michaels defending his title against British Bulldog, wins the match, and then is gang attacked by Owen Hart, who is doing a commentary at ringside.
Full tuxedo,
by the way. Yeah, and full tuxedo, and as well as Vader. And then the save is made by Ahmed Johnson and the Ultimate Warrior, who had been there for a bit of a for a couple months. He debuted again at WrestleMania 12. And then he was suddenly suspended on camera by Gorilla Monsoon for missing some live events. That was how it was explained on television. I know there was some sort of big to-do over, you know, probably some other things with him and Vince as well. But
he did no-show events, though.
He did, yeah. I think he had an excuse of a death in the family or something along those lines. But, people were, you know, there was a whole lot of, you know, issues with that. But that was Warrior's last run in WWE, last involvement with them. Gosh, it's hard to believe it's been 16 years now. But, yeah. That is the case.
This is how messed up wrestling is. Is that if you're liked, if you're well liked in that company, everyone lies for you. You know, like, yeah, the Warrior had other things going on, but he no-shows events, and he gets fired for that. And they flat out say, yeah, he no-showed events, and that's why we got rid of him.
Right.
Like, even, what, a year or so earlier, you know, over in ECW, Sabu does the same thing. Heyman comes out and just buries him, you know, for no-showing an event to go to Japan and make more money. Whereas, like, you contrast that with the, like, various indiscretions that Shawn Michaels had over the years. It's like he lost his smile. No, he's faking a back injury. Or, like, Shawn Michaels got beat up by 47 Marines. Like, you know, one off-duty drunk Navy guy beat him up in Syracuse. But it's just so funny. Like, if you're in Vince's good graces, you're just covered for forever.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, it's not even necessarily forever, because there are times when you can be out of good graces and they will do it, and then you're immediately – or they won't do it, and then you're back in good graces and they will do it. Like, yeah. with Warrior's replacement, Sid, as a matter of fact. Like,
right.
You know, he was a guy who was notorious for showing up when he felt like it and not showing up when he felt like it, and just sort of, you know, had a lot of random absences and so on and so forth. But he is brought back as the replacement for Ultimate Warrior. And like, oh, yay, Sid, we're happy with Sid again.
I mean, I'm happy with Sid again.
Well, you're happy with Sid again. I'm ambivalent to Sid again, but I think Sid's a downgrade from the Warrior in my mind, despite, you know, Warrior's obvious, you know, bouts of lunacy. But as far as a guy who I'm excited to see, I would take Warrior over Sid most of the time.
Yeah, that's – to me, they're very comparable.
Yeah.
By no means will I ever say either of them are, you know, good wrestlers. And they probably have the same caliber of mic skill, but for whatever reason, it's just, to me, like, Sid, he's weird. Like, he's this gigantic dude. He's like almost 7 feet tall, and he's solid, but he's not very big. Does that make any sense?
Well, you know, I did notice that when they do the when they have like a split camera view of like Sean and Ahmed introducing their new
right.
partner, and then Cornette's on the other end, and then you see like the shape of Sid emerging from behind Ahmed. It's like, it's weird that Ahmed was able to hide Sid behind him. I guess Sid was sitting down or whatever, or crouched down, but suddenly you see Ahmed move and then Sid appear. And then Corey has this great, like, shocked face, when the fact that it's
right.
Sid, and Sid starts screaming and, you know, rambling and raving.
Yeah. That's just the thing. It's like, that makes him, gives him a unique look, and he has that blonde perm, and I don't know. It's just like, it's kind of funny where a guy who's not conventionally the bulky big wrestler is still kind of considered to be this extremely dangerous man, when like now, if he wasn't like 6'8", you know, we have Triple H call him a skinny fat ass, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like he was a little bit more, I feel like he was a little bigger than that, but he wasn't like, he was smaller than, you know, some of the other giants. I'll give you that. I feel like he was pretty muscular, but yeah, he was never like, he wasn't as super muscular as Warrior was at his peak or a guy like that. I mean, he was big and built, but yeah, it wasn't the same. I'll definitely agree with that. I mean, I feel like his physique was similar to Undertaker's.
Yeah, but Undertaker wears a shirt.
Well, true. Yeah.
That's true. I feel like I have bigger pecs than Sid.
Well, I haven't seen your pecs, but I'll take your word for it.
I mean, I'm 6'1". I work out. I'm in fairly decent shape. By no means am I, you know, in professional wrestling shape. But
right.
I feel, and even though I'm sure Sid can like bench way more than me, I just feel like I have more chest definition than Sid does, and that's kind of why I love him. I kind of love like seeing something like that's almost like me out there if I was 7 inches taller.
Right. Yeah. It's like watching somebody in basketball with your coordination, but they're just great because they're so tall.
Right. Or the exact opposite. Either like they're super tiny and they're awesome, or they're super huge and they're just like awkward. It's great, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that reminds me of all those Sid El Gigante matches.
Yes. Those were something.
Let's never talk about those.
Speaking of someone who is worse than Sid.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yes. So, there's that angle, and then following one with which is sort of very comical of you see Sean coming back after winning a match. He and Ahmed celebrate together, and then there's an ambush with the three of the heels attacking them, and then it makes its way sort of into like a parking lot type area, or like an underneath the arena type thing where there's some parking. And then suddenly, now this may have just been in the video package, and I hope that was the case, but suddenly you hear Sid's music, and a car comes speeding in, and he comes out of it and helps out his boys. And
he crashes his rental Lincoln into those trash cans, man.
That's right. Yes, he crashes in the trash cans. Yeah, so Sid established himself as not an awesome driver. Not a surprise, but
he's in a rush.
Well, it's true. He's trying to help his friend. So
his friend who bravely staved off 87 Marines in Syracuse, New York.
Right. Well, you know, these are obviously trained professionals. So, yeah, exactly. You know, he's going to have a tougher time with those. So yeah, that's basically the build up until the show. And I do like that Jim Cornette made a guarantee to refund the money of everyone in the arena, which were in Vancouver, by the way, GM Center, I believe. And
GM Place.
Excuse me. Thank you. Yes.
I know my hockey arenas.
Ah, yes. I do not know my hockey arenas. So, to refund everyone there and everyone on pay-per-view, which he said would cost him between $7 to $10 million. Repeated that figure several times. I don't really buy it, but if his team loses tonight, so he's very confident.
I mean, it seems to me the Federation's a little more confident too.
Right. Yeah. It's almost as if they have some sort of way to control the outcome of the match.
Well, that, and you know, somehow they think they're gonna get enough buys for a 2-hour, $15 pay-per-view.
Yeah. Well.
All right.
Yeah.
God bless you. I mean, we got Ahmed Johnson on top.
Sure.
That's a draw.
We should talk a little bit about Ahmed, because Ahmed was like, you know,
he's the forgotten man in this match.
Right. And he had a presence that was pretty incredible. I mean, people were super into him for a while.
I don't remember that way. Please, I go on. Like I Ahmed Johnson to me never grabbed me, so I kind of blocked out a lot of like that his section. I remember his feud with Goldust.
Yeah, which ended right before this with him winning the Intercontinental title.
Right, but yeah, please elaborate on. You teach me Ahmed, I'll teach you Sid. It'll be a really a good growing experience we'll have today.
All right, well, you know, he debuted late in '95 and was just this big, monstrous, intimidating guy. I mean, he had, you know, almost a Goldberg-like presence. I mean, he never got nearly that big. But it certainly, he had that look. They gave him a big push. He dominated a lot of guys. I mean, I feel like he was over. I mean, the big negatives with him were that he legitimately injured himself and other people routinely. Then his physical conditioning declined, and he started to not look nearly as impressive. He just looked kind of chunky and, you know, and sloppy. And the biggest thing was, or I don't know if it was the biggest thing, but next to it was that his talking was pretty awful. And
yes.
They have him do promos, and they would be pretty incomprehensible. I mean, Sid did loud, incomprehensible, sometimes promos, but you generally got the gist of it. And he had enough. He had some sort of. They were usually amusing in their own way, but Ahmed's were just like you had no idea what he was saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like he could have, you know, if he'd have been harnessed properly, if he'd been trained better or just had more, you know, took care of his opponents, took care of himself more, Ahmed could have been a really big thing.
So, the poncho he wore before the match.
The airbrush jacket, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was cut the side, so for me it's a poncho.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, the front was airbrushed with Sid, him, and Sean. A cartoon portrait, and the back was airbrushed with the Cam Cornette. I don't get that. Was that a thing he did? Did he wear custom airbrush ponchos?
I don't remember him doing that. No, that would have been a thing Ultimate Warrior would normally have done.
Ooh, that is a good point.
Yeah, because he did that, you know, with the WrestleMania 7 jacket where he had Macho and him both on it, and then I think on his. On his trunks, he had the title, and then on the other side, it said "means much more than this."
Do you think they commissioned it anyway, and then they just decided to give it to Ahmed?
Well, because Sid was on it, so that wouldn't make sense. I mean, they could have just. Well, I guess they could have commissioned.
You can change Sid into Warrior pretty easily.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would make sense. That would make a lot of sense actually, because yeah, that's not something Ahmed would have ever worn. That's something Warrior definitely would have worn. So
there's the answer to that one Twitter question. That's how the match would have been different if Warrior were involved.
Yes. Yes.
There you go. Whoever tweeted that question.
Right. Yeah. Star of Savage. Good.
Star of Savage.
Good buddy.
At Star of Savage.
Yeah.
Other than that, completely the same, except Warrior would be wearing an airbrush poncho.
Yeah. Although should talk about afterward where it would have gone with Warrior after this as opposed to Sid, because I think that would have been different. But
yeah,
itself goes, there probably would have been that much difference. So, yeah, but Ahmed's jacket was very interesting. It's always weird to see Michael Hayes as Doc Hendricks.
Right. Ahmed, he slipped up too. In the promo before the match, he called him Mike.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
He goes, let me say Mike, blah, 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 Doc. You know, it was like that. And then what I found the most amusing about that entire promo was, you know, Ahmed, marble mouths out, whatever he did. And then the first thing Sid says is what he's trying to say. Sid had to be the translator for Ahmed Johnson.
Yes. That is very interesting, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if the promos would have improved at all with Sid to Warrior either. They probably would have been about the same. They would have been a different type of insanity, but still lots of insanity.
Both are equally fun. I'm not discrediting the Warrior. I'm a little partial to Sid.
Right. So ring entrances. Shawn Michaels actually out first with Jose Lothario, and the best part.
Yeah, which I found interesting. Like the champion is the first one out.
Yeah. Sean has a ponytail. He has his tights are sort of like zebra patterned, but they have like a red script, you know, with Heartbreak Kid on the back and so forth. And then as he and Jose are walking to the ring, the rail collapses with the fans falling over in one section. It's pretty amusing. And then they kind of, you know, some officials rush over there and then get everyone back, and no one seems to be hurt or anything like that. But it was just like, that's certainly something I've never seen happen.
That's one of those images they use during the various Tell Me a Lie montages they do for Sean.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen those in a long time. So.
Right. They did it when he retired, too. I know that. I think it was part of the Hall of Fame thing they did. But but again, it's so funny that happened for this match.
Right.
You can kind of see it in Sean's face, because this is kind of right in the middle of his brat period.
Yeah.
When that happened, he was like, oh God, I gotta touch this little boy now. Like, I gotta hug somebody. Like, you could tell he clearly was not pleased that the railing collapsed. And if it happened like during a match, he probably would have just pouted his way to the end of it. Whereas this way, he was able to kind of take a breath and still wrestle a match.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness.
he wrestled it. I mean, he wrestled it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not you know, particularly bad match. It's just sort of, you know, it exists. You know, there are some things to remember, but not really that much. Ahmed is out next. And we our announced team, Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and Jim Ross. And Vince McMahon has the immortal line of, "You want to talk about gang warfare?" And then mentioned with Ahmed in your corner. And then after a bit of a pause, he says, "And Psycho Sid." Like, I don't know if it was because, like, you know, he didn't want to just say the black guy was in the gang warfare thing, or if he just, you know, forgot to include Psycho Sid or what have you. But I found that amusing.
Did Ahmed have the Mean Streets background story? I feel like that's something he did.
I'm almost certain that.
So it's like it's not unheard of to think that he like would have been around gangs and some of that kind of stuff. It's one of those comments that he draws more attention to it by covering for it.
Right.
You know,
I'm not sure he was even covering for it, if it was just like a, you know, longer than, you know, usual pause or whatever, but I found it notable.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I did want to ask you, I'm sure you've discussed this in other podcasts, but like your thoughts on Vince as the play-by-play, especially during this period of time.
It was getting worse during this period of time, which is interesting that they brought Ross in and did the three-man team, because I feel like that happened reasonably close to this period.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was fairly good, but you could tell that Vince was slipping in terms of just his ability to follow like the big moves and to call the big moves. I mean, he was never all that specific as a commentator anyway, and that's not really what WWE does, but he just felt like he was getting more and more lost, I guess, for lack of a better term.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, during matches, he would do that.
You can definitely hear how he is now screaming in headsets, how he was in 96 commenting. Like, he's very much about filling you in on the continuity of why Owen Hart has a cast on his arm and why, you know, and why Vader and Ahmed Johnson are kind of like really a little angry at each other. It's on the one hand, it's kind of commendable because you never know if this is your first match you're watching. On the other hand, it's like, I already dropped the money on this. I know what's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't watch the whole show, but was he storytelling to the main event, or did he figure at this point, you've already paid your money, let me actually concentrate on Steve Austin and Mark Mero or something like that?
They were pretty focused on the matches that were going on as they were going on.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't feel like there was a whole lot of hammering point, you know, about what else was going on, excuse me, during that time. Yeah, I always thought of Vince as good with big pictures and good at selling stories, like overall stories, and not as good at filling in the stories of what's going on in the actual match. As far, you know, he wasn't bad at it by any terms, but like, the bigger the vision, the better he was. The smaller the detail, the less good he was at it.
Mm-hmm. And that, and his nasally commenting voice, wasn't very good. You know, as I say with a stuffed nose. To
right, right. I mean, I don't know. I think I'm just so used to it that it's not. I can't really judge whether it's good or bad. It's Vince. You know, that's what he did.
I think Vince's a great talker. I think when he puts on his old beige WWF jacket and has to call a match and what a maneuver, you know, I think that voice is really poor when you've got some very capable commenters in your stable, you know?
Sure. And obviously they gave the keys to Jim Ross, you know, about a year later, and, you know, and of course he was the best, and he, you know, did it for the most part for the next decade or so.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and after, of course, Sid comes out afterward, and the announcers are, at this point, kind of putting over the fact that Sid, you know, he's a little crazy, he might not be that reliable. They give, they mention that at one point Sid and Sean had their issues, and Sid giving Sean 5 power bombs, which I don't remember that specifically, if that was when Sid turned on Sean after Sean lost at WrestleMania, or if that was later.
That was at the end of the Survivor Series wildcard match.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was Survivor Series 95, I want to say.
Right. Yeah. So it wasn't that, so, you know, 9 months before. Now Sid left, I believe, in January of 96, then of course came back in the summer. So he'd been gone about 6 months. So
yeah.
Here's
something I may have just realized, and maybe I'm super late to the party on this. Psycho Sid, that's an allusion to the Arn Anderson thing, right?
No, because they called him that in 92 before that, too.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. They called him it when he turned. And he didn't last that long, but they
oh, okay. I was talking about Sid Vicious then.
No, he was never Sid Vicious in WWF. He
was
Sid Justice for a while.
Sid Justice. And then he turned on Hogan for WrestleMania 8.
Yeah, and then...
And that's when he became Psycho Sid?
Oh, yeah, I mean, they were toying with it. He didn't really last that long because he left right after WrestleMania, so I don't know if they really like were officially calling him Psycho Sid. I remember Gorilla once specifically calling him Insane Sid Justice. I think they were working toward the name, and I'm sure they used it, but they didn't really officially brand him as Psycho Sid until the 95, when he came back in 95.
Okay. So they were toying with it, and the Art Anderson thing, unrelated but totally cemented it.
That's probably a fair analysis. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He gives Sean a big bear hug upon entering the ring. I feel like there's a lot of like the good guys high fiving each other, and
there are so many two-handed double high fives.
Yes, it's like we're really, really working hard to communicate to you that we are all good buddies and we like each other.
There, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of like something else they could have done, but there really was just like, hey, Ahmed, good punch, and they high-fived.
It felt like overcompensating.
A little bit. I mean, it felt like at that level of high-fiving, you needed a heel turn.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it felt like this was going to happen. So, and it didn't, but that felt like that was where they were going to it. So, the heels all come together to Vader's music, so they're all united. Diana Hart, who had been coming out with her husband Davey Boy a lot during matches, doesn't come out during this one. They did a promo earlier in the show where he said it was going to be too dangerous. We start out with Ahmed and Vader. Well, we want to start out with that, but then Vader wants Sean. Sean stands on the ropes, and he hops in, and then they're pretty tentative at first, and actually through a decent number of stages of this match, it's a lot of just kind of feeling each other out. This match goes, you know, good 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they're pacing themselves to a certain extent. You have Vader flexing and cornering Sean. Eventually, they lock up. Later, Vader lifts him up. Sean punches out of it and sort of messing up Vader's mask. But then Vader sort of knocks him down with one blow. And then we get a big flurry by Sean where he hits a Hurricane Rana on Vader. Then a cross body sends them both out. Then Sean follows immediately with a baseball slide and then a big plancha onto the floor. And then there's another dive off the apron, which Sean lands into the steel rail. And then finally, Vader, after that flurry, Vader has a little bit of control.
Yeah, I guess it's just sort of the prototypical small, quick guy versus big behemoth. He's just using his speed to keep Vader off balance, I suppose you could say.
Right. Yeah. This definitely follows, I think, the Vader Sting template to a T, really.
Right. I mean, the fact is, you know, like I said, this is a 30-minute match. You know, spoiler alert here, Sean Russell's about 24 of those 30 minutes.
Right.
So I think he's just doing everything he can to sort of keep the crowd excited for it because it's weird. Like, maybe because you watch it with, at least I did, with kind of today's expectations on it. I'm kind of expecting the crowd to be firmly heel because it's in Vancouver,
right?
And because Owen's there, and they weren't. So it was just sort of a thing where it wasn't even so much that like Sean had to try to win the crowd or be resigned to the fact that they're not going to be working heel, but they certainly aren't going to be the crowd favorite here. Like, no, Sean was actively trying to keep a crowd engaged in a main event where he had two big lugs as a tag team partner.
Yeah. And the crowd was hot for the match. And,
yeah.
They weren't really that into anything else on the show. They weren't really given a whole lot to be excited about. Unless you feel like Body Donna's as a babyface team against the Smoking Guns is going to really, you know, light your fire.
I mean, Sonny wore that little jorts.
That's true. That's true. Or how about Mankind versus Henry Godwin?
No, that's a pass.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, this I did watch the entire show. It's not a good show. It
did
really.
They had Sid sell for Henry Godwin one time.
They did have Sid sell for Henry Godwin?
They had a match, and it wasn't a squash. They had to have Sid sell for him.
Yeah. Well, Henry Godwin was big, I mean, I guess, so.
We're getting off track. I'm sorry.
Cool. We are getting off track. That's okay. We're allowed to get off track. It's perfectly acceptable. So at this point, Sean is smashed by Vader in the corner with a bunch of punches and elbows. I always love that when he just pounds the guy in the corner and the guy goes staggering down. Vader was very, very good at that and very good at a lot of things, but especially that. And then Sean's able to escape from a suplex, tag Sid. The fans go nuts.
Yeah. He was getting all the chants all night.
Yeah.
I mean, when he came out, he pretty much got the biggest pop of the four entrances.
Yeah, he was the most over guy of the on babyface side, no question about it.
Yeah. I mean, he was more over than Owen in that match.
Yeah.
I mean, Owen was getting boos. I mean, granted he was a bad guy, that's good, but I'm saying it's like it's not like it was Canada and oh my god, it's Owen Hart. Like this was the Sid crowd.
Yeah.
Which I mean, we'll get to at the end, but that's something actually I do would like to get into about would that have been different if Warrior was there? Because Warrior's return was kind of lukewarm.
I don't know. I mean, I think the first stages of it were pretty hot. I don't think the crowd was anywhere near turning on him yet. I don't think he'd warm people down. Like, I don't know if he'd have gotten as big of a reaction as Sid just because Sid was fresh here and Warrior had been around for a few months. But I don't think it would have been a point where the crowd would have turned on Warrior.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
Again, his run was so short, and he's mostly – I just remember him smoking a cigar in Goldust chair that, like, it's kind of hard to really put it into, whether it was a good or bad run, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was outstanding, but I don't think it was awful either. I mean, you know, he had the feud with Goldust. He had the feud with Lawler. You know, the famous one where he wore the hat when he never wore a hat and then Lawler hit him with a frame poster type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I haven't looked at that stuff in a while to see how it kind of holds up, but I don't remember it being awful. It was just sort of more there.
You know? Okay.
Yeah. So then Sid punches Vader and Sid here, I feel like his punches sort of differed depending on match or depending on, you know, what was going on. But here, they remind me of, like, he's winding up a baseball.
Well, in Sid's case, it'd be a softball. But, yes. This kind of goes back to simultaneously why I love Sid and why he's so Sid-like. He has this terrible-looking offense. He has these uppercut knife chop punches.
Yeah.
His kicks are just kind of like him like raising his leg.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what a kick is, but
his kicks are okay, but
they're unique looking and he's big enough and they're fast enough where they look strong, but it's not like, you know, it doesn't feel like the impact is there with it.
Right.
And like I always kind of thought about Sid, his offense. I always thought of Sid as being Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Okay.
Like, you know the famous scene in that book where Lenny is petting the puppies and he pets them too hard because he doesn't understand how to be gentle.
Yes.
And he unfortunately kills a puppy.
Right.
Like, Sid is the other end of that, where he's George in Lenny's body. Because he doesn't want to hurt anything. He doesn't want to crush any puppies. So his offense looks really, really weak. And it's sort of, I guess I'm the first person to ever compare Sid to a Steinbeck novel. But that's just what I always think about him.
Can I tell you how much I appreciate that analogy first happened on my show?
Yes. You can praise me all day.
All right. Well, that was very good. That is perfect. That is exactly what Sid is doing right here. So.
Okay.
Yes. So there are several. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, because you know, here's the thing too, because you just actually said earlier about how great Vader is, and I do think Vader is very enjoyable to watch, but I don't get why like Vader is kind of revered as much and Sid's kind of derided a little bit. When to me, like, Vader is just as confusing and just as silly as Sid. Because, like, Sid, yeah, I'm not going to say he's the safest worker in the world. But, like, with a power bomb, it is a two-man operation. And while it's mostly Sid's responsibility to protect you when he gets a power bomb, you still get yourself in the correct position to take the bomb correctly. And it does not excuse Sid from hurting someone with a power bomb or something like that. But, like, Vader potatoes people all the time. And, like, that's a one-man thing. He has to effectively punch you and not hurt you, and yet... You know, Vader is looked upon as being as great, or when he splashes people and he's hurt people, you know, nothing's hurt people with a splash. But it's just like, I just don't understand that where, you know, here's a guy who wears a mask and sometimes doesn't wear a mask, and it's kind of confusing to me as to his whole deal. It's kind of held up in this, like, yeah, Vader is, you know, was one of the best of the 90s, and like Sid is this joke. I don't quite get that, you know.
Well, I mean, I think it's because everything that Vader did pretty much looked like fearsome and beastly, and
he was fearsome and beastly. He was punching you.
Well, but I think there are very widely different standards of thought as to how stiff and how snug you can be, and I think Vader was very, very high on that spectrum. And I think there's a tolerance among some wrestlers that they're willing to take, you know. Some snug hits and some stiffness to make a match better. And a lot of wrestlers don't care for that. But I feel like what Vader does generally for the most part in his matches is considered okay, especially if you're talking about like an old school mentality of wrestling and of working and of being as tight and as snug as possible. The Johnny Valentine-esque school of wrestling, for lack of a better term. But I think Sid looking silly and unbelievable is not really well regarded. Now, you know, as far as hurting people, like causing major injuries, I don't think anyone would ever accept that. But I don't, you know, I think obviously Vader has the Joe Thurman power bomb in WCW in, you know, I think 93-ish or so. I don't know if there's any other incidents that where he's caused a major injury like that. I think that was more just considered a freak thing as opposed to anyone being particularly sloppy.
No, I mean, I would never say Vader was unsafe. I just, again, it was just sort of an observation I had where it's, you know, it seems a little weird to me again that he's kind of revered as being this great guy. But, you know, you got your bruises with you know, with
yeah,
Vader, whereas Sid, you know, his hit list of being unsafe, like, it's sometimes it's a two-way street, and you need to protect yourself just as much as he needs to protect you.
Sure.
You know?
Well, I think, you know, like, a good, better comparison is, like, Vader and Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Like, Bret Hart always, you know, everything he did looked pretty good, but he had a reputation for not hurting guys or not ever causing guys any, you know, major injuries or, you know, or even, you know, his punches look good, but he didn't bruise guys or, you know, so on and so forth. Not that I recall Vader bruising a whole lot of people or anything, but yeah, it's just, but I feel like those two are more comparable as far as their level of, you know, it looking good and the level of stiffness that, you know, and pain that they cause their opponents.
Okay.
I don't know. But I get your point. I mean, there's maybe a double standard there on some level, but I do think that if you just look at the matches that they had and the performances they gave in those matches, I don't think there's any comparison between Vader and Sid. I just think Vader was better in every regard and made matches better and more interesting and more exciting for being in them, where Sid, I guess, did maybe on an intentional comedy level, but beyond that, not so much.
I agree with that.
All right. Yay. So at this point, we get several kicks and clotheslines for everyone. Sid tosses out Owen and Davey and then clotheslines Vader over the top rope. And then in celebration, we get an immortal Sean and Sid chest bump.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That they even, like, take an elaborate amount of time to set up.
Well, because Sid's got a solid foot on Shawn Michaels.
That's true. It does take a little bit of coordination there. So, Owen then tries to sneak up on Sid, but he's clotheslined down right away. Ahmed Johnson comes in with the sloppiest series of German suplexes I perhaps have ever seen. I don't even necessarily know if he was going for Germans, but it was kind of like an over-the-shoulder type back suplex.
It was so un-German, like, I think they called it something along the lines of just waistlock suplex.
Yes, yeah. Now, German suplexes weren't really a thing that were happening in WWE yet, so that would be another thing. But yeah. A series of three, that would be more of, you know, a Benoit Guerrero thing they would do in the early 2000s. And then
I imagine that was more just Owen saying, "That was terrible, do it again. That was terrible, do it again."
So then Ahmed misses a jumping elbow. We get Davey in, and he hammers Ahmed down for a while. They mention during this of Ahmed having his hand broken by Davey. And his first loss also had been caused by Owen with Owen's cast. Ahmed had lost to Vader. So that was a nice way of tying Ahmed into the story of, you know, having issues with all three of these guys when he hadn't really feuded with any of them yet. Then then Davey runs into a big spine buster. And then Ahmed hits the Pearl River Plunge, which is a double underhook into a sit-out powerbomb. But then Vader breaks it up.
Yeah, so I guess that was – well, it wasn't a near fall because Vader broke up at one, but I guess it was our first big spot in the match.
Yeah, our first time in which we think someone might be in jeopardy of losing the match.
So, yeah.
Then Vader beats up Ahmed in the corner for a while, but Ahmed rallies. And his punches look to me like he's trying to stir some pancake batter. And just happens to sort of be like knocking the guy on the end of it. It's very strange.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess again that's the antithesis of what I was saying, is that sometimes maybe you gotta bruise a little bit to have you not think about pancakes or a match.
Exactly, and I love pancakes, so I don't mind thinking about them during the match. But
more of a French toast guy.
French toast is great too. I'm not I can go either way. It just depends on my mood, I suppose. So
okay.
So eventually that sends Vader down. Vader then is able to rake the face and get a big splash in the corner and a bit of an onslaught. Finally, he does a jumping splash in the corner, but Ahmed picks him up and gets a power slam for two. I'm not sure if he was going for the power slam, he just kind of fell. But either way, he lands on it. And then there is who it's described as a pesky Owen Hart, who runs in and hits a spinning heel kick and stomps on Ahmed's face for a little while. So Owen always being pesky and getting those that offense in on the bigger men.
Right. Going back though to the powerbomb spot in the corner.
Sure.
There's one thing I noticed during this match, and I wonder if you picked it up. During all of the Irish whips and all that stuff, were the ropes looser during this match?
I don't know. There was when they were thrown into one of the turnbuckles,
it made a different noise too.
Yeah, it was like some sort. Was it like a squeak or like a high pitched like some sort of rattle type sound? I can't really describe it, but
a rattle was the best way because the ropes were shaking and the metal of the turnbuckle was sort of, you were right there to hear it, and it just seemed like the match moved a little faster, or it looked like it was faster, just because these guys are almost. They're almost like falling out of the ring with how deep the ropes are. It was like boxing ropes almost.
Yeah. I don't know. There was a spot in the Undertaker Goldust match where Goldust had to take off the turnbuckle, and they exposed it. So I don't know. Maybe when he did that, something got messed up, or they just didn't put it together right, or somebody slammed into something that made it loose. You know, we got some big guys in this match. I guess it's possible.
I think that too, or just that the fact that there's Vader, Sid, Ahmed Johnson, and maybe even lesser extent Davey Boy,
Right.
are all in this match. Like maybe they had to really loosen the ropes up. I was just curious if you noticed that, if you thought it was weird, or if that's just the stuff I look at.
I didn't notice particularly that it changed their effect on how they ran the ropes, but I definitely noticed the sound when, you know, the guys were slammed into that turnbuckle.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
all.
So Ahmed gets a press slam on Owen, tags into Sid. The crowd adores Sid again. He gets a big boot on Owen and more knuckleball style punches. Bulldog comes in and he gets a large, long delayed vertical suplex on Sid, which gets a pretty big reaction, even though it's a heel making that move. The announcers are duly impressed as well. Vader then comes in with an elbow drop. Then Vader comes in. We get a bunch of Sid chances. We get a Vader Sid showdown again. Vader shoulder blocks him down, and then Davey's in again. We get a lot of quick tags of the heels kind of doing, you know, all their different things on Sid for a while. It's interesting that the reaction to Vader as Sid is so great here. I bet they would have been maybe if WCW had stuck with Sid and Vader, they should have done Starrcade '93 in Vancouver instead of Charlotte.
Yeah, it's one of those things I'll never know, I guess. I don't know how to say that. I try to think of a funny thing to say, but
That's all right.
aborting, sorry.
Yes. We get a bunch of punches, headbutts and punches by Davey. And it strikes me how good Davey looks here, both just kind of in his wrestling, and he's leaner than he was in his early 90 days, but he's still really cut and, you know, and in great shape. And he looks about as good as I've ever seen him during this time. I thought his matches, particularly the King of the Ring match with Shawn Michaels, was really good. And granted, Shawn Michaels is there, but I really thought they had some great chemistry. And I really felt like Bulldog was just at a higher level, kind of in this '96 and into '97 with his tag team with Owen, and then evolving into being part of, you know, the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, you know, Davey is a reverse Samson, short haired, and he got really, really good.
Yes.
He was, I mean, he's always been an accessory to good acts. But you need those guys. And it's like I agree. I think the Shawn Bulldog feud, although they rarely ever had like a full blown feud, always I think probably the most high profile stuff was the European title
Right.
tournament. But even then they always kind of Because, you know, they both were in tag teams, and there was always kind of the Hart Association that you go back to Royal Rumble 95. Rumble 95, when they were 1 and 2 and that kind of stuff. There was always just sort of, they kind of just rose up the ranks together at the same time, and it was always just sort of, they were always in the same place at the same time.
Yeah,
So,
and Shawn even beats Davey for the Intercontinental Championship in '92. So they have like a
right
bunch of different.
after he beat Brett and.
Yeah, they have a bunch of different spots in, you know, in the '90s in which they interact with each other on different levels, doing different things. It's kind of
Yeah.
interesting to go back and to see, you know, where the parallels are.
So that's what it is. It's just, you know, they never quite had that feud, but there's always just two dudes who are always going for the same thing. And I think that's best exemplified when Davey Boy didn't help Shawn fend off 87 Marines in Syracuse, New York.
No, that was not very nice.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So eventually Sid no-sells what Davey's throwing at him and punches him down. Then we get Shawn off the top and gets two on to Davey. But then Shawn misses a splash, a charge in the corner, hits the post. Davey nails him with some headbutts. Then Shawn sends Davey into Vader, knocking Davey off the apron. There's a cover for two, and Shawn dodges as Owen tries to hit an elbow drop and accidentally lands on Davey. Another two. Nice little spot there for Shawn to out with the heels for a little bit. And then Davey tags in Owen as Owen isn't paying attention, and then Shawn pulls Owen in, sort of slingshots him in through the ropes. Then Owen does a Oklahoma roll like around the ring, really confusing Vince, who has no idea what to make of it. It only gets two, and Owen gets a body press, but then Sean rolls in through two. So Sean and Owen kind of do a bunch of wrestling sequences. Then Sean escapes a suplex and is able to get a victory roll for two, but then Owen rolls through it for two, and then they kind of struggle on a backslide, but Owen flips over it instead. And so we get just like 90 seconds of Owen and Sean running through, you know, kind of all the wrestling stuff they do, but it was pretty good. It was just kind of a nice little couple minutes of the match.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, at least who is into the wrestling part, was waiting for the Owen Sean sequences.
Sure.
Because they knew that was what they were going to wrestle with. And I don't know, to me, it kind of felt a lot like, I mean, maybe my memory is off, but it always felt like kind of like a weird rehash of some spots that Brett and Sean did. Am I wrong to say that?
I don't remember them specifically. I mean, I feel like obviously Owen and Brett would do the victory roll.
That might be what I'm thinking
sequence,
of
but I don't really remember. Like the thing that surprised me the most of it was when Sean tried the backslide and they were both battling over it, and instead of Sean getting it, Owen flipping backward and going over his shoulder. I don't think I've ever seen that as a count.
Yeah, that was the good spot. That was definitely the best spot of the of that sequence. It's cool. I definitely, I enjoy watching it. Owen Hart was, my favorite wrestler as a youth. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of exciting to see, him, you know, hang with the champ at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he never really got, he and Sean had a pay-per-view match before Sean won the title, but they never really had anything major while Sean was champion. So,
yeah, well, you know, Owen, I love Owen, but he's not as great as people remember him being. Much like Davey Boy, like he was always kind of an accessory to the main event. He never was the main event. It's kind of similar. I mean, my opinion of this, I mean, it's kind of the same way I feel about what happened with Jerry Lawler a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I wrote about it over on Kayfabe Comedy, and it's like, it's not so much that, like, obviously it's tragic what happened to Owen Hart. This is this tragic, you know, with the heart attack with Jerry Lawler, and I'm not trying to belittle that. But I feel like we put these people on these pedestals because it happened at a wrestling show. And not even that, a televised wrestling show. So, like, we watched it. We were there. And we kind of feel a little closer to the tragedy than maybe we have any right feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, too, like, Owen Hart, it wasn't a wrestling death. I mean, it was an accident that happened to him. So we also are a little more sympathetic towards it rather than, like, someone like Pillman or, you know, Eddie Guerrero or something like that, who, you know, no matter where they were in their life at that moment, they put enough damage on their bodies at that time to, you know, prematurely die due to, you know, drugs.
Sure.
So yeah, that intent also, we add a little more reverence to it. And like, it's kind of, to me, like Owen and Savage are like the two revered dead wrestlers. But conversely also, you know, Savage is one of the best of all time. So it's kind of hard to, you know, compare them like that. And maybe it's not fair to compare because we're talking about men here and their lives. But I don't know. It's like, it's just kind of a weird thing where, well, how come Owens didn't get more main events? Well, he wasn't a good promo and he just didn't connect with the crowd. He was just kind of a sniveling heel who would rub his Slammy Awards King Arena's face and it gets heat, but it's not a complex, deep character that you want to connect to either because you want to see him get beat or because you want to live through him, you know, one or the other. He was kind of one dimensional in a lot of his stuff.
Yeah. And I love Owen as well, but I agree with that. I mean, I do think that the way that he died has affected people's, you know, his reputation in, you know, and what a performer he was. And he was a very good performer and even better than that at times. I mean, he was, you know, absolutely fantastic at his best, but there were times in which he kind of maybe his effort was a little bit. He kind of coasted through some things here and there, and
same with Cornette earlier. You know, you could tell he wanted to retire and go home.
Right, and there were times in which that you definitely kind of felt that way, and that doesn't mean he wasn't great. And you know, if he were around today and the performer he was today, definitely he would have been a guy who would, you know, you could definitely see it as a world champion and, you know, have some runs with that, but. But at the time, yeah, that really wouldn't have made sense for the most part. I mean, you know, they could have done an Owen Shawn pay-per-view match and it would have been great. And I'm sure it would have been fine. You know, I'm not sure it would have been any worse of a choice than Davey and Shawn as a pay-per-view match. But that was just kind of what, you know, was happening at the time.
Right. No, I agree. But, you know, I got a feeling that you want to center in those 90 seconds of being like, oh, what could have been Owen and Shawn? It's like they've had countless matches together.
Yeah,
you know, Owen's the one who gave Shawn the fake concussion, you know, whatever that angle was. You know, right. He's the one who did the Hurricanrana, the Enziguri.
Right.
So it's not like, again, like Owen and Shawn are similar to Owen and to Shawn and Bulldog. They kind of are always tangentially related, and just sort of rose in the ranks together, and they just cross paths when they cross paths. It doesn't mean we need a full blown Shawn Owen feud because. That's a step down because Shawn and Brett were such epic rivals. Mm-hmm. Why would I want to deal with your little brother? I already beat you.
Yeah, exactly. So, so Davey's in. He gets a big backdrop and a leg drop, then a power slam, but more the Randy Orton style power slam as opposed to his traditional over the shoulder one. He misses a jumping elbow, which JR thinks would have finished it, which makes you wonder how many matches that JR has watched if he thinks a jumping elbow drop is going to finish a match. But Owen then knocks Shawn from behind with the cast, and Davey knocks him down. Vader slowly, he comes in, he slowly picks up Shawn by the hair, hammers away at a corner, and then Shawn is whipped into the buckle, and he does his big flip over onto the floor. Vader and Sid almost get into it while Owen attacks Shawn on the floor and then sends him in. Vader gets a short arm clothesline for two. And then Vader locks him in what I think would be considered a Cobra Clutch, although I don't really know.
It was kind of Million Dollar Dream-ish.
Right, which isn't the Million Dollar Dream basically the Cobra Clutch, or am I on that? Yeah. So.
I was confusing the Cobra and the Camel Clutch. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
too many Arabic clutches.
Exactly. So, so at this point, they lock in for a decent amount of time. Then someone tries to jump into the ring and Davey sort of chases him off. JR calls him an idiot. And that sort of distracts everyone for not that long. It pretty much everyone gets back into the match quickly enough.
Shawn definitely puts on his boo-boo face.
Oh, I didn't notice that. But
yeah, he definitely rolls his eyes and was like, come on. And him and Vader, you know, they weren't laughing, but they had a little thing to say about it.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that was the real inspiration for discussing the match today. You know, someone ran in on Ryback on Monday. Time to get this one done.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Vader punches Shawn into the gut and then relocks the move after it's broken up for a little bit. And then Shawn punches out of it. Vader locks it in again. And we do have some nice heel work by Vader where he's sort of choking Shawn while behind the ref's back. Like the ref's looking at it there and then, you know, looking at it from behind Vader's shoulder. And Vader's doing the choke while he's able to avoid eye contact. So that's kind of cool. You see Sid and Jose complaining for it for a while. Eventually, Shawn is able to come off the ropes, but Vader tackles him pretty quickly. Vader gets a splash, but then Ahmed comes in with definitely his best offensive move of the match, laying in a really fierce clothesline that topples down Vader. Like, pretty cool move by Ahmed there.
Yeah, definitely Ahmed's best spot.
Yeah. Then Shawn almost covers, but then he decides to go for the tag instead. But Davey prevents him from doing so, and in fact repeatedly punches him down, lifts him into the pile, sort of lifts him like he's looks like he's going for a pile driver, but then it ends up sort of being in the power bomb position. But Shawn's able to escape. He tries the fix, but then Davey gets the Samoan drop. Go ahead.
It was he was going for the pile driver. Looked like he was going for a razor's edge. And then he turned into a bear, backbreaker.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it was like, but it was like a really weird backbreaker.
Right.
Or not backbreaker. It was like, oh yeah, they called it a backbreaker, but it was more of a like a torture rack, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a, but a as a more of a horizontal backbreaker, or one shoulder back, a one shoulder torture rack is what it was.
Sure. Sure. But nevertheless, Shaw's able to escape it, and then Davey gets the Samoan drop out of it. Then both men end up being down. We try to reach for tags, but then Owen manages to keep Sean from tagging. We basically have like a pretty long sequence of Sean fighting against the heels, him trying to get the tag, and then the tag being cut off after the heels make a tag. Double running head collision by Sean and Owen. Then Bulldog prevents the tag, gets the running power slam, and then Sid, instead of immediately trying to break up the pin, goes to the opposite ropes and then drops the Hogan-esque leg drop onto the back of Davey's head.
Makes sense to me.
Sure. Vader then comes in. Sean does make the tag from Ahmed, and somehow, and I don't know, understand how, because I'm pretty sure the ref was looking at it, he misses that tag. And then we get a nice gang attack on Michaels, Syracuse-esque, you might say, of three men punching him at one time instead of 87. And eventually that leads to Davey getting a two on Sean.
And Jose Lothario was not helping situations by jumping on that apron, telling the ref to look. Don't tell the ref how to do his job, Jose.
Yeah, Jose.
You should know better. You're a veteran.
Jose was not super useful. Although Jose, about as useful as your usual babyface manager, I guess.
Right. I mean, you know, Jose, I'm not well versed in his career, so I'm not going to disparage him one way or the other. But my experience with him is strictly as Sean's manager, and I never quite cared for him.
Yeah, it was kind of an odd. He was kind of an odd guy to bring in because he didn't really add much to the table.
He was fine for the WrestleMania 12 build, but you know, to that.
After that, yeah, it just
to that for that train wreck of a match, but whatever.
Sure. So Vader's in, or I'm sorry, no. Owen comes off the top, and then he drop kicks Davey instead of Sean.
I love in that part where Vince says, "If Owen hits him with that cast, it's over." And it is a missile drop kick off the top rope. Like, excellent psychology, Vince. Good storytelling. I was totally expecting one thing, it went the other way.
Yes.
Masterful
swerve.
Crap.
You know, there you go. It's a good swerve.
Vince Russo has became our public play man now.
Exactly. So, Sean drags himself all the way across the ring, gets the tag on Sid. He choke slams, or he clotheslines Vader, then choke slams him, choke slams Owen, and then Davey.
Kind of chokeslams Davey.
Yeah, kinda, yeah. Ahmed tags in. They double clothesline Vader down. Then Michaels is launched by Sid onto Vader off the top, sort of a rocket launcher. Bulldog makes the save, and he and Ahmed end up outside. Owen nails Ahmed with the cast. And I'm not really clear on what happens to Sid at this point, because he seems to randomly disappear for a bit. Meanwhile, Michaels grabs Cornette on the apron. Vader tries to – he grabs the racket. He tries to hit Sean, but Sean is able to dodge it, get the racket himself, and then nail Vader. He goes for the cover, but then Vader's able to shove him off at two, surprising the announcers, because usually when you hit the guy with the weapon, it tends to knock him out, especially in 1996 when the whole hitting a guy with what you expect to be a finish and then it not being a finish thing was not necessarily in vogue like it is today.
I guess that was just kind of the start of building the monster Vader.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I have a quick Vader question. Because I've never been a big Vader guy. The man they called Vader, was that a WWF thing, or is that something he was always called? And why was he called the man they called Vader?
It was a WWF thing, and I have no idea. Although WCW would call Sting the man they call Sting. In fact, he had the song "The Man They Call Sting."
Okay, so it's probably an indirect jab at that.
Maybe, although it doesn't make much sense to be that, but it's certainly a possibility. Yeah, I don't. For some reason they called him the man they call Vader. So
listen, they called Mike Jones Virgil because that was Dusty's real name. I mean, you know, what does that make sense? Ribs are ribs. I mean, you can't explain them.
Yeah. Well, anyway. I get them if they don't like if they or just whatever, just something to name a character. But yeah, the man they call Vader thing was always weird. I never really understood what they were going with that or what that was, you know, meant to do. But
right. Okay, yeah. So anyway, Vader kicks out of the rocket shot.
Exactly. So Sean tunes up the band, but Cornette grabs his foot, and meanwhile, and I believe Sean hits him, and then Vader's able to splash him into the corner. Jose then nails Jimmy, rather, and Vader hits his pump splash onto Sean, gets the three count, probably his biggest WWE win, I would say. He beat The Undertaker once, too, I believe at Royal Rumble, so that, you know, maybe that's the second biggest one, but definitely a career highlight for him in 96. And Sid, at this point, reappears to check in on Sean, make sure he's okay. And Vince goes over the top to praise Sean for the valiancy of his effort here, even despite this loss. Like, I do feel like Vince going so over the top on Sean, like he was like Sean's dad, or that Sean was like his favorite ever. I think that sort of made Sean even more obnoxious than he already
seemed.
And he was a pretty obnoxious character.
Vince definitely has some odd affection for Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
I'm not going to speculate on what that means or the extent of what it did for Shawn, but yeah, I mean, like anything in life, you only do what you get away with, or you only get away with what people allow you to get away with. And, you know, Shawn was a giant brat because he had Vince's ear, you know, he could do it because he could be. And stuff like that that happens, you know?
Yeah. So so eventually the good guys decide to be sort of losers and beat up the heels. Sid powerbombs Davey and then Owen, lands a boot on Vader and then tries to the powerbomb, but Bulldog's able to drag Vader out. And then Michaels follows with a big dive and attack on Vader from the top of another, I guess, a tope. And the heels bail out. The faces stay in the ring. And the reaction here is sort of mild cheers from the fans. I guess they were expecting the good guys to win. Or, you know, this is kind of unusual for WWE booking. I mean, it makes logical sense to set up for Vader for and Shawn for the next month at SummerSlam. But, you know, the matches like this usually tend to be won by the good guys.
Right. And I like the finish a lot because it's not so much like Shawn had the match won and the ref missed the count or something like that. Or it was, you know, he was going to go for his finisher. If he hit it, that probably was it. But he got held up by the heels. But it's not, you know, but again, it wasn't like Vader was down and out. So no one really looked weak in it. And it definitely kind of set up a foundation to continue a feud. And, you know, the In Your House pay-per-views, you mentioned the crowd, how they were kind of weird. Like, wouldn't the crowd have had, like, four or five more matches because just for the live show? Because the In Your Houses were only two-hour shows, right?
That's a good question. I know some of them had matches afterward, although I don't think this one was one of them. I think this was the... This was the final match. I don't think there were any dark matches afterward.
Oh, okay.
There was the free-for-all match with Bradshaw and Savio Vega before then, which this might have been the first free-for-all, actually. I could be wrong about that. But, yeah, I don't see any listed. And I feel like that was more the early In Your Houses, and they kind of stopped doing that. But I'm not positive.
Oh, well, then yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. So Sid lifts up Sean and Ahmed's hands as they carry the belts. There's no, tension played up by the faces, although they were, you know, long-term going with Sid against Sean at, Survivor Series 96. But the next month would be Sean and Vader having their one-on-one match, which Sean wins. And then, Vader would move on to Sid, and eventually Sid would win that match and go on to face Sean in a match at Madison Square Garden in which the crowd loved Sid and did not love Sean.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a, you know, I feel like Sean was the more obnoxious character, so by far. So I can see why, you know, people favored Sid, and Sid just had that raw appeal despite, like, I feel like Sid is like a meal that you know is not good for you, and you, and doesn't even necessarily taste that good, but for some reason you just have some sort of psychological need to have it and need to celebrate it.
Well, I guess it's part of it. I guess, and I'm going back to this point for the third time on here, but again, it's just, he has a commitment to what he does that's magnetic. Okay. And here, like, I don't know, I mean, I did a little reading on Sid's Wikipedia page, which is written a little tongue in cheek, but it's still, serious though. And in fact, there are a couple times the author had to go like, "That's not a joke," in here. But like, here's a question. Here's an actual sentence about Sid. Sid was the muscle of the group and initially brought in to counteract the strength of RoboCop at Capital Combat 1990. How can you not love this man? Like, and I know it's irony, and I'm all hipstery, and I like things that are bad, and blah blah blah. And it's like, that's is part of it, but you know, I've said this plenty of times. I love that wrestling is a universe where RoboCop can exist.
I do too. I do.
So why wouldn't I love someone who will fight RoboCop in complete earnestness and not roll his eyes about it? Like, that's the attraction of Sid. That's the infectious of him, is that he's given all this garbage, and he just does it because he's like, this is wrestling. And, like, that's not to say Sid's perfect, and he's definitely no-showed, and he's definitely kind of had his little temper tantrums, and, like, that's a little bit part of his...
And he might have gotten stabby once with Arn Anderson.
He may have stabbed Arn 16 more times than Arn stabbed him.
Right.
But, you know, and that's some of the bad you have to take with him, and you have to kind of go, is this somebody I want in my program every week? But, I don't know, like, part of me is just kind of like, just, I look at Sid, and I just have a gleeful amount of fun. And he can fight RoboCop, he can try to act scare the Shockmaster, and I can compare him to a migrant worker during the Depression. So, like, why wouldn't I think Sid is the best?
All right. So is Sid irony free? Is he the anti postmodern wrestler?
Sid is, a love of Sid requires so much irony that it transcends it and it loops back around. It becomes just pure unadulterated joy. You need to understand the silliness of wrestling to get Sid, but then once you can appreciate it at that level, it's real. It's something you got to feel deep inside your heart.
I just don't feel deep inside my heart.
Sid is Whoville, and I guess you're the Grinch of Christmas.
I've been compared to the Grinch many times. You're not the first. So.
Oh, well, I didn't. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I love Christmas, so it's weird. But I don't know. So do you think Warrior Sean would have happened if Warrior would have stuck around? Or what do you think of the possibility of that ever happening? Or not, obviously, will not happen now, but of it happening in Act 96?
You know, again, I don't have the biggest memory of Warrior's time during then. To me, Warrior is an attraction, especially kind of at that point too. He's not a dude who needs to be in title feuds. The crowd just sort of liked pumping ropes and screaming and all that kind of stuff. And, I don't know. Here's a better question. Do you think Sean would have had to drop to the Warrior?
No, I mean, I figure it would have been a, if they would have done it, it would have been kind of like a passing the torch kind of thing, you know, to a certain extent.
Do you think Warrior would have done that?
Yeah, I don't see why he wouldn't have lost like a title match with the champion. I mean, if he was getting a big push and that was just kind of like the, you know, one big thing. I mean, I don't know, maybe he'd have been weird about it. I mean, you know, it's not like he wasn't ever weird about things, but I don't know, he went back to WCW just so that, you know, Hulk Hogan could get a win back over him. And, you know, he did it for a lot of money. And he was getting paid probably a decent amount of money in WWE. So, you know.
Okay. You know, it's interesting to say, to think about. I kind of think, let's take a school of thought that if Warrior wasn't cut loose by In Your House 9, he would have been cut loose by SummerSlam. And if it was not by SummerSlam, it would have been by Survivor Series and that kind of stuff. And we can think about, well, what would have happened, but okay, well then let's go into any kind of what if then. It's so easy to sort of fantasy book that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
It's fun. It's fun. Yeah. But I just kind of think that, I don't think this match would have been drastically different with the Warrior in it. I don't think the outcome would have been drastically different. The mere fact of how hot the crowd was to Sid, I think if Warrior was there, the match would have been a lot worse because the crowd would have been as into it.
Yeah.
Not to say Warrior wasn't popular at that time and Warrior wouldn't, you know, I'm not saying it would have been a 60-0 drop, but definitely I just kind of think that the better outcome happened with Sid in there.
Yeah. I just wonder where, like, you know, if they hadn't brought Sid back, where they would have gone with Shawn after Vader, if they would have extended Vader for longer or, you know, or what have you, or if they were going to bring back Sid anyway, they just happened to do it earlier than they expected because Warrior pooped out or whatever, you know?
Maybe we would have gotten that, Shawn Owen match we all wanted.
There you go. Yeah. Who knows? There's an alternate universe somewhere where all this has happened, but we have not discovered it yet, so we can only speculate.
I would love it if that was the only difference, if we found the alternate universe. Owen and Shawn wrestle In Your House 12.
Yeah.
So
we can dare to dream. Dream big. Let's do that.
Science.
Yes, exactly. So anything else you think we should talk about here?
Just one silly observation, but I can let it go.
No, hit me.
Okay. The entrance set, which is the house with the garage and the door.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you wish it came out of the door instead of the garage?
That would make more sense, wouldn't it?
I mean, I know there's a higher probability of something going wrong, and it would look silly. And it looks stupid. You would go, why don't they come from the big garage? But I don't know, just in your house, and y'all got to turn the door and come out of like a narrow way. I don't know. I just that's what I wish happens.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, this match, a lot of iconic things happened in it, or maybe not a lot, but you know, the kids falling over the ramp, memorable to stuff, you know, the crowd really hot for Sid. Even some of the really good Owen Bulldog tag teaming stuff that was going on, like kind of the stuff you think about when you think about these characters sort of happened in this match, but it's because it's on a secondary show, during what was probably the Federation's lowest point.
Right.
It's just not that remembered very well. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, the match is okay. I mean, as I said, Shawn wrestles about 95% of it, which is probably the right idea.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's a fun match. I mean, it's obviously
because Owen, Vader, and Bulldog are all good workers.
Right. And so, and WCW, you know, was casting a shadow, you know, with the Outsiders and against Sting, Luger, and Savage, and you know what happens there. But yeah, you it's sort of like it's pretty easy to forget what WWE was doing during this point because they weren't really doing anything that memorable. Where WCW was revolutionizing, you know, wrestling. So
yeah. For 30 minutes, you know, I've seen a lot worse, and everyone worked really hard in the match.
Yeah.
You know, even, you know, again, I don't have a whole lot of Ahmed Johnson memories, and while he certainly didn't like disprove any of the reputation he has, I didn't think he was anything bad.
Yeah, I mean, he did everything that he did fine. Sid did everything that he did fine. There was a couple moments of weirdness, but it wasn't necessarily horrible weirdness. It was just weirdness. So. So I'll take it. It was an entertaining effort and certainly, decently enjoyable time. I'm not saying it's by no means an essential, but you know, if you come across it and want to watch it, you know, it's decently worth that. I don't recommend watching anything else in the show though, because it's not a good show. But this is pretty solid.
Good.
All right. Well, why don't you let everyone know about Kayfabe Comedy and where they can find you on the internet and so on and so forth.
Yes, kayfabecomedy.com. It's one word. We like to think of ourselves as a mirror to wrestling society, man. We hold it up and you see the truth inside yourself. Not really. We just write about some of the sillier aspects of either storylines or what's going on today, or even then things that might really get our goat. Lately, it's kind of been a lot of the charitable endeavors that the WWE has or has not been doing, specifically with American Heart Disease. And I think today, actually, something went up where I sent I gave all the, not all, but many of the charitable endeavors a letter grade. I think the only one I omitted was Headlock on Hunger, because I couldn't find any videos for it. But Headlock on Hunger gets a B+ because the Tonka's involved. So that's it. KayfabeComedy.com. Podcast every 2 weeks. We write. Check it out. I'd appreciate that.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. And you guys are on Twitter as well, of course, Kayfabe Comedy.
Yes. And we tweet Raw and TNA when we feel like it.
Cool. Well,
which is more often than not. I'm not trying to be all cool, but
right.
Sometimes I don't.
Yeah. It's all right. Everyone needs a break.
Yeah. So, Jason, thank you for having me on again.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on. Everyone can check us out at WrestleSpective.com and at Twitter and Facebook and so on and so forth. Also, please remember to check out our sponsor, RotoReels.com, for wrestling DVDs and downloads. So thanks, everyone, and we'll be back again soon.